This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams.
Hi, and welcome to episode 389 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com, and joining me from the middle of Victoria once again, David Marland. How are you?
Tiger, tiger, burning bright. Tiger, tiger. I'm sorry, Bruce.
What?
I've got to confess, I'm an addict.
To what?
I'm a recovering tiger tragic, and I will admit that I've gone a whole week without saying yellow and black.
Right. Okay.
And it was very tragic for me because my dad took me to my first Richmond Grand Final in 1967.
Right.
When I was very little, I must add.
Yeah.
And the only one I have missed that they played in was, of course, this one because no one couldn't get a ticket. So I've seen every live Richmond Grand Final since 67 except this year. But yes.
Right.
So it's a big event here.
Yeah.
There's no other sport in the world at the moment, as far as I know. But I think the interesting thing about it all is by about Wednesday, it was sort of all over and they're starting to talk about next season.
Right.
So
remind me, who did they play? Oh, the Crows, Adelaide Crows. That's right.
Adelaide Crows, that's right. They demolished Western Sydney the week before.
That's right.
So I went to that match and the amazing part about that is that there was a ground with 94,000 people in it.
Yep.
90,000 of them were Richmond fans. Greater Western Sydney does not have a big following.
Yeah.
And they sang that song at the end.
Right.
The gusto and the MCG, I don't know if you've been there, it is a seriously big set of stands, was vibrating.
Right.
Literally vibrating. And they said they measured it at 130 decibels on the ground.
Wow.
Just an incredible phenomena. I've never witnessed anything like it.
130 dB, that is really loud.
Yeah, it is
horrendously loud. So one of the things that I know from my audio theory is that 80 decibel sound pressure level, if it's continuous, will cause permanent hearing damage after 8 hours, right? Now, 80 dB would be like standing on a busy intersection in the middle of a large city, right? So that's probably about 80 dB. And if you stood there for 8 hours, you would sustain a very small amount but permanent hearing damage, right? And for every 10 dB you increase the sound pressure level, the time required to cause permanent hearing damage halves. So at 90 dB, it's 4 hours. At 100 dB, it's 2 hours. At 110, it's 1 hour. At 120, it's 30 minutes. At 130, it's 15 minutes. So pretty much everyone who was at that game probably sustained a little bit of permanent hearing damage.
Look, it took my ears until about 3 or 4 o'clock on the Sunday afternoon to start recovering.
Yep, I would absolutely believe that.
Yeah.
You know when you come out of a loud concert and your hearing sounds all weird, like there's no top end and everything sounds muffled?
Yes.
Yeah, it's called a threshold shift or a hearing threshold shift, and it's basically your body's self-defense mechanism. It modifies the position of the hair follicles inside the cochlea so as to reduce the potential damage to the cochlea, and what you're describing is exactly the same thing. Like you're exposed to a loud sound for a long period of time, and the body goes into a self-protective mode to, to try and avoid the damage.
Well, the amazing thing is we're outside the ground afterwards, and we had to yell to hear.
Yeah, I'd believe
it. To even talk to each other, it was just. Yeah.
Wow.
And I think the thing that was amazing is that you've got one club in the AFL that has probably the smallest membership and the other one that's got a very big membership. And I don't think they've ever seen a game where you've had that huge difference in participation.
Yeah, right.
Wow. So I don't think that will probably ever happen again. But it was just staggering.
Wow.
Yeah, so how's it been with you?
Talk some photography. Hey, I've had a rough week this week. I promise listeners, we will get to some photography. Friday of last week, myself, Greg, and Leah, who was we were the three producers for the Sydney operation for the Australian Radio Network. All three of us got called, summoned to individual meetings, and told the nature of the business has changed. We don't have enough work for three of you. One of you's got to go. And here's your payout figure. Go and have a think about it for the weekend. And Monday morning, we'll talk to all of you. And if one of you volunteers to take the redundancy, great. And if none of you do, then the business will have to decide. But basically, one of you is going home Monday. And unfortunately, that was me. After nine years at the Australian Radio Network, I got told on Monday, sorry, we just don't need you anymore. Your position is redundant as of today. And so I finished Monday. And so this week has been lovely not to have to do the commute every day, but also just sort of still sitting here scratching my head going, wow, I just wasn't expecting that. So I'm on the hunt for other income sources. Got a few ideas kicking around, been in touch with a heap of people, got a heap more people to get in touch with, and I'm pretty confident I'll pick up something fairly soon. So anyway.
Well, my heart goes out to you, and I think other listeners would think the same. So
thank you, mate.
You know, I just hope it all goes well. But as you say, let's talk some photography.
Yeah, absolutely. So Glyn's off in India, obviously. But in the meantime, we've had a few emails come in. Rob Coates sent me one, said, "G'day, Inks. Some not half bad snaps here." And this is a link to abc.net.au. And these are Wildlife Photographer of the Year images for 2017. And I'm assuming these are worldwide images, but it does include a couple of Australian photographers. So, yeah, some pretty amazing stuff here. Pretty gruesome stuff, obviously. The lead image of the rhino with its horn cut off. Obviously taken with a bit of flash because the sun's off in the background. But
the front of the rhino has
been lit.
Yeah, it's a pretty confronting photograph, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which is probably why it won an award.
I love the
the fox
stuck in.
Yeah.
That is great. A picture of a fox. He's half buried in the snow. You know what that reminds me of? That reminds me of I don't know the name of the creature from Ice Age. You know the one that's always chasing the acorn?
Oh, yes.
It just looks like the tail end of him.
Yeah, just look, it's just got the head, shoulders, half the body down in a hole. It's all covered in white. It's just, it's just brilliant. That is definitely my favourite.
And I love the next image, the grip of the gulls. This was taken by a 5.5-year-old photographer. That is fantastic.
So do we get to put her on our hate list already?
Quite possibly.
It's pretty darn good. So, in fact, the one of the fox was between 11 and 14.
Yeah, right. That's what that was. That didn't click with me. I saw it, but it didn't really click in my head as to what that meant until I saw the next one. It was 10 years and under. But I love the image of the crabs on the seafloor. There's just thousands of them and one octopus.
Feeling a bit lonely.
I can blend in. No one will notice. I've got the same number of legs. No one will notice me. some great images here. I love the slow shutter speed image of the turtle going into the ocean too. That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Is quite cool. Again, there's a bit of flash there.
Yeah.
And it looks like multiple images looking at the...
It does, doesn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, right.
But you sort of wonder, particularly the giant gathering of the sperm whales.
Yeah.
How they did that.
That is phenomenal. I don't know that I'd want to be in the water with all those whales around. Because can't they be a little bit narky when they feel, a bit threatened, like you're in their space?
Oh, you probably have to ask David Kembry about that.
Yeah, probably.
He's our whale man.
He is. But, there's some great images in there. Definitely worth a look. Moving on. Rob sent me another email, and he said, "More dickheads spoiling it for everyone else." And this was a story that appeared on lightstalking.com about an Australian couple who got married in Greece and had a photograph taken at a monastery where allegedly it was only simulated. She was allegedly or simulated performing of oral sex on her on her new husband, and has incurred the wrath of the Greek authorities, and apparently they've now banned that location for for wedding photography. Oops. So
I mean, really, it's a sacred site to somebody.
Yeah,
respect it.
Yeah.
Goodness.
So has since forbidden all foreign weddings. So maybe it's still available to Greeks getting married, but it's been all foreign weddings at the monastery have been banned. So yeah.
Yes.
Dear. Anyway, Steve Peters sent me a couple of links on email this week with links to alternate trigger trap cable replacements. Thank you, Steve. I haven't yet had a chance to look at them, but I have still got your email sitting in my inbox, and I will actually get to it for reasons just mentioned. This week's just been the kind of week where I haven't really had time to go looking at things like that. So I will get to them, I promise, and thank you once again. Lior from Israel, who we heard from a few weeks back regarding neutral density filters, wrote back to me and he said, "Hey, Bruce and Glenn, I just want to thank you both for the dedication. This is way above any expectation I had for world fame. and kudos for pronouncing my name correctly. You're the first English speaker to do that. Thanks a bunch, Lior." So, I'm pretty impressed with that. Thanks, mate.
Well, clearly we Australians speak good English, don't we?
Obviously. Yeah, that's right. And then I got three stories from Adam this week. The first was a drone that crashed into a passenger plane in Canada. Now, apparently this drone was flying in the approach corridor to an airport, which is probably not legal. It was flying at three times the maximum allowed height for drones, so illegal. And thankfully didn't hit, the cockpit or one of the engines of the aeroplane, because that could have been a massive disaster and potentially, loss of life.
Yep.
But it did collide with the plane. I'm not sure what the plane was. It just said it crashed into a commercial aeroplane. It doesn't say what sort of plane that was. But, again, numbnuts ruining it for everybody else.
Well, exactly. And as an ex-pilot, I've got no time for people who have done that.
Yeah, right.
It says anyone that endangers the safety of an aircraft could face a $25,000 fine or prison time.
Yep.
I hope they get both.
Yeah.
But even as Glenn's pointed out with his drone work here, there are very clear apps that will show you where to and where not to fly.
Yep.
And just do that, or it'll be banned for everybody.
Yeah. Or, as they say there, even though it comes with potential privacy issues, maybe tracking and identifying the drone will help find those who break the rules. And that's the problem. If people don't act responsibly, then this stuff will just become more and more heavily regulated as every day goes by, and things like tracking will become a necessary part of every drone sold.
Yep.
So that, they can find who's being an idiot and charge them accordingly. If people were to behave responsibly from the outset, then it'd probably never get to that. This next story really intrigued me. This was a Chinese photographer who decided that he didn't like the optical viewfinder on top of his Sony A7 camera. So he actually carved it off the top of the camera and then engineered a piece of metal to go in its place to close, the top of the camera body. So it now looks like a A6500, but it's actually an A7. And of course, the difference between those two cameras is that the A7 is a 35mm sensor, where the A6500 is a, what do you call the other one? The smaller one? APS-C. So the A6500 uses an APS-C sensor, where the A7 uses a 35mm. So, yeah, so he's now got something that looks like an A6500 but has a 35mm sensor in it. It's like, wow, talk about dedication.
He's engineered it fairly well.
Yeah.
He's pretty keen.
Yeah. But that's serious commitment to wanting to change the look of the camera. Yeah, because, I mean, that's precision engineering stuff, you know. That's not something you're just going to knock up in your garage on the weekend, you know.
Well, I notice his tools are basically a fine grinder and an air blower.
Yeah, right.
And then he's fashioned another cap to go over the top of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to be keen.
What's interesting, though, is when you look at where the tools are in that image, you can see the original top plate that he's taken off. And when you look at the finished image that right at the head of the blog post, it looks like the piece that he milled doesn't include the cutout holes for the two rotary dials. It's like it finishes sort of halfway across the body, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it does. If you go, if you look further down below the tools, you'll see how he's removed that whole top plate, separated that from the camera, then he has cut off the actual optical viewfinder part and then milled his other piece
and gone clicked it on the top of that. Right, yep. I get you. Yeah,
the original is the chassis.
Talk about dedication.
Yeah, you sort of wonder, don't you?
I don't know why. I don't know. Maybe he just wanted to trick people into thinking he was using a 6500 instead. I don't know.
Yeah, anyway. I guess for me, I'm sort of going, just because you can.
Yeah, it doesn't mean why? You should.
Yeah. But if I fork out that sort of money on a camera, I'm not going to take an angle grinder to it.
No, no, absolutely not. And the last story that Adam posted, which, David, you also included in your list of things to cover tonight, and I had seen it as well, and I think a lot of people will be very excited by, is that Nik Software, which, as we all know, got bought by Google a few years ago, and Google ran with it for probably 12 months and then announced that they were A, shutting down the development of it, and B, allowing it to be downloaded for free forever, has now been bought by DxO. So interesting turn of events, you know. So I would imagine that Google will remove their freely available version, although it says the current version is available for free on DxO's website. But they plan to go on with the development, and there will be Nik Collection 2018 edition released mid-2018. So that's exciting that they're going to start developing Nik software even further.
That's cool. I, as a person that's got Nik, I think it's brilliant stuff. And yes, I was one of those ones disappointed. One of the reports I saw is that it may pay to go and reinstall it from the DxO website, because then you get put on their mailing list.
Right.
So that when they bring out 2018, you'll get notified. The suggestion is that it might cost. So, yeah, watch this space.
I would expect that they will charge for it. It wouldn't make good business sense to, you know, buy something like that from Google and then give it away for free, especially if you're putting further R&D into it. So I'm sure there will be a price attached to it, but hopefully it'll be reasonable, not excessive. And, I'm sure a lot of people will be excited to know that it's going to get developed further.
Yeah, and DxO have got a good reputation for good quality image work. So,
definitely. So good stuff. So, David, what do you got?
Well, first one I've got is, what the are Adobe thinking of?
Okay.
I'm a Lightroom CC subscriber.
Right.
And I noticed a couple of days before I got the email from Adobe.
Yeah.
At DP Review, we're talking about changes to Lightroom and to Photoshop CC. And I honestly got more information from DP Review and Lightroom Queen and places like that to understand what was going on than I did by clicking on the Adobe button.
Right.
Yeah. So what's happening is that if you've got Lightroom CC,
yeah,
there is a new edition of Lightroom CC, but that's different in concept to the current edition of Lightroom CC.
Oh, okay.
So the Lightroom CC you have now that you operate on your desktop will now be referred to as Lightroom Classic CC.
Okay.
And product now to be known as Lightroom CC will store your files on the cloud and will operate from the cloud.
Oh, what?
So Lightroom CC will now be just a cloud base, but Lightroom Classic CC, you'll base your files on your computer.
Right.
So they're making an awfully big gamble and assuming that everybody's got really easy access to internet, which even in the United States is a problem. But there's more. The Lightroom, and I think it had got up to Lightroom 6.
The boxed version.
Boxed version will cease.
Right.
And there'll be no more development on that after nearly at the end of this year.
Didn't Adobe say about 2 years ago that there would always be a boxed version?
And they're saying that they will also continue the development of Lightroom Classic CC. So everybody's going, what?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So Darktable's looking really good.
Yeah.
But to add a little bit more confusion to it,
right?
Photoshop CC, which is your desk-based Photoshop CC, is still called Photoshop CC.
Right. It's not called Classic.
It's not called Classic.
Right.
I don't know what the marketing department were thinking of.
So are there two versions of Photoshop, like a cloud only as well as a desktop?
No, there is only the Photoshop CC.
Right.
So which is the desktop one. It's Lightroom's got the two versions.
Yeah, see, I guess Photoshop would be a little bit harder to do in the cloud simply because people can have, you know, hundreds of layers within a Photoshop document. And yeah, trying to serve that over the web would just be impossible. So I guess it makes sense that that has to remain, you know, locally managed, if you like.
Long may it remain impossible.
Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah, you're sort of going, what on earth are they thinking of? And then the sweetener for Lightroom Classic CC is it's supposed to be faster. And I've tried it for one night, and yes, it is.
But faster than what?
Well, faster than Lightroom CC was.
Right.
So it's processing a little bit quicker.
Okay.
The other thing that's a little bit scary is that we'll completely have to reconfigure your catalog because they're using a slightly different algorithm to process the catalog.
Right. That's not uncommon, though. I've noticed that with almost every back in the days when I was running Lightroom, that every time there was a new version number, so I'm not talking about dot releases, but when you went from Lightroom 3 to Lightroom 4 and from Lightroom 4 to Lightroom 5, every time you would open your old catalog, it would tell you, you know, this is an old version of Lightroom catalog and it needs to be upgraded to the current version and, you know, click here to continue kind of thing. So that's not uncommon.
Yeah. Well, it certainly did that. It then goes back and demolishes any previous versions.
Really?
Yep.
Does it not allow you to rename the new version?
Well, rename the old version so it can't find it before you load up.
Right, because in the past, when I remember this from my, you know, 3 to 4 and 4 to 5 transitions, you would open a catalog, you know, let's say it was just called familyphotos.lcrt, and it would say this is an old version of a catalog file. It needs to be upgraded to the current version. And it would then allow you to create a name for the, you know, the modified version of the catalog file. And so you could always just add to it, you know, LR4 or whatever to signify that this is the version 4 version of the catalog rather than the version 3 version of the catalog. So are you saying that they've removed that ability?
No, what they've done is that it goes back through, because what sometimes would happen is you'd put the new version of Photoshop on and it just takes over from the old.
Right.
What it's gone into your computer and done is actually demolished the files, meaning the operating files of the previous versions.
What?
So you go into it, I'm just having a look now at Adobe Photoshop, say 2014. The only thing that's there is a subdirectory for plugins, and that's it.
Oh, you're referring to the operating files for Lightroom itself, not the catalog
Correct.
File. Right. Oh, sorry. I thought you were saying that it was demolishing your catalog file.
No, no, no.
I'm going to say, wow, that's a bit drastic.
No, it's just so previously it hasn't always demolished the operating files of the previous versions.
Right. Okay. But now it is.
But now it does. Right. So that's also there.
Hey.
The other thing that Lightroom, its other big new claim to fame is that it has an ability to be able to mask based on colors or luminosity. You actually get
Ooh, nice.
The masking. Yeah. I've had a go. The only tutorial is follow the steps, which I have done without a lot of success. So there's something I'm fundamentally doing wrong.
Right.
But you put a graduated filter over, so you actually mask with, say, your graduated filter or one of the other, your adjustment brush.
Yep.
You then have this ability to then go below the box and then select areas with an eyedropper. Based on, say, color.
Yeah.
And then within that masked area, only that color will be adjusted as you play around with it.
Okay.
But I think it's going to take a little bit of learning to see what you can get out of it. Naturally, it all looks magical on screen. But hey,
you know what?
Yeah.
Darktable has this and has had it for ages.
This is sounding really good.
Oh, man. It's one of the things that I absolutely love about Darktable is that every single module within the development engine, once you have adjusted settings for that module to alter your image, you can then do any combination of brush-based masks.
Yeah.
Or you can do what they refer to as parametric masks, which basically allow you to use either the lightness channel, the A channel, the B channel, so like in lab mode, or you can use the hue, the saturation, or the luminosity to build your masks for that particular module.
Wow.
It is so flexible. It is mind-blowing. And once you've created a mask in, let's say you've used one particular module. Let's say you used an exposure module, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you've created a mask so that only a certain portion of the image is affected by that exposure module. You can save that mask so that you can load that mask into other modules. If you want to, you know, let's say you decided I want to use some saturation on that same restricted area of the image later on.
Right.
So you'd bring up the saturation module and you'd go load that mask that I created over in the exposure module into the saturation module so that it, again, just limits it to the same area of pixels. So,
wow.
So forgive
me
if I laugh.
Yeah.
At Lightroom.
So they're catching up with the freeware bandit.
Yeah, exactly. I love it.
So you're creating a bit of a mask library?
You can, yes. You can create hundreds of masks within a particular just for one single RAW file. You can have multiple masks in the mask panel that lists all of the masks that you've created. And you can reuse them in multiple modules if you need to, or you can just keep on creating new masks for different modules as you see fit.
Can't wait till my son gets home at Christmas because he knows how to turn things to Linux.
Man, I've got to say, there is no way I'm ever going back. I absolutely love Darktable. I really do.
And
I know there are probably people who are getting sick of hearing me raving about it, but it really is good. Anyway.
Oh dear.
So is that the end of the Adobe story for the moment?
There's another one a bit further down, but I thought I'd break it up.
Oh, okay. All right. So tell us about Rocky Nook. What's that?
Okay. So Rocky Nook from the Book Reviews is one of the publishers of books. They publish a large
yep.
variety of photography books, mm-hmm. and the link I've sent is their blog. As people may be aware, in Northern California, they've had some absolutely horrific bushfires.
Yes.
And I certainly live in a part of the world where bushfires are a threat. And for a limited time, they are putting 100% of their sales as donations. So that's a 35% off of their complete range of books, plus they will donate 100% of what they receive. The only problem for us with podcast is that it finishes on October the 29th, which is Sunday, but
right.
it is American time. So we've probably got well into Monday.
About a 24-hour window.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So what I will do is I will put this link on the Shutters Inc. Facebook page now. So anyone that does at least follow the page will be able to act on this for the remainder of this week. But as we just said, you know, the podcast comes out Sunday, which will be Saturday American time. So there'll probably only be about a 24-hour window to make use of this. But if you want to support it, please follow the link and pick up some books.
I think they've done a great job, too, to do that. I think it's nice. Fantastic.
Yeah.
And having personally had to... do bushfire recovery and that. It's really good of them to see them, putting their funds to a good cause.
Yeah, definitely. So I see you've got the A7R III on your list.
Well, I put it there. You're being a Sony man.
Oh, mate, I seriously this week haven't looked at anything. Sorry.
Well, you don't know whether you want to chop the top off this one.
No. So from what I've read, this sort of sits in between the A7R Mark II and the A9. So it's essentially 42 megapixel, 35 mil sensor, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, it is a 35 mil sensor. Yep.
Yep.
Yep. And 10 frames per second. And apparently, according to Sony, the best low light performance. I don't know if they said of any of their cameras, because I immediately thought, well, hang on, how does this stack up against the S series? Because the whole selling point of the S series, the A7S, the A7S II, was their low light performance, because it's a lower megapixel count on the sensor, which obviously makes for much better low light, well noise performance. So that gives it better low light performance. But I did read somewhere that they reckon that the low light performance of this is something about the best of something or other. I don't have the story that I was reading earlier on in front of me, so I can't remember what exactly it was that they said, but pretty awesome looking beast.
I'm just flicking through the article. I mean, one of the big claims to this one is 10 frames a second.
Yep.
And so they're trying to get into that sports market.
Yeah.
I would say with it. They put a lot of work into the focusing system, and they're claiming a lot longer battery life.
And 15 stops of dynamic range, which is a big call.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That is seriously...
And 14-bit raw capture across more of its shooting modes, including continuous shooting. Wow. Mm. See, that's a progression. Well, I mean, obviously my A850 is now being almost a 10-year-old camera. With my camera, you get 14-bit RAW when you shoot in single shot mode, but you only get 12-bit RAW when you shoot in burst mode. This is claiming 14-bit RAW capture in continuous mode, in uncompressed RAW, and e-shutter mode. Wow. Mm.
I mean, the computing power going into the cameras to be capable of doing that.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Especially at 42 megapixels.
Yeah.
You know, 10 frames, that's pretty incredible stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess, sports shooters might need that sort of stuff. Every time I see, claims of these stupid frame counts per second, I just think, buy a video camera. And this does shoot video as well, as you would expect. Although, did I see that it was only 1920 by 1080? That can't be right. It must be 4K, surely. It must be 4K. It must be.
Video.
Sorry, no, I was looking at...
Can't shoot UHD 4K from the full width of its sensor, which is a bit of a dig at a Canon, but gets better results in Super 35, which is basically in APS-C crop mode.
Right. Yeah. Interesting.
That's their suggestion. So, yeah, and if you're a Sony fan,
yeah,
well worth a look, I would say.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be plenty of people dumping their A7 IIs on eBay and picking up an A7 III because they feel like that's going to make them a better photographer. But anyway, all right, so we're on to another Adobe story. What do we got?
Yeah, this one came through Petapixel, and Adobe, obviously at some event, talked about a new add-in to Photoshop called Deep Fill. And it's billed as a content-aware fill that understands what's in your photo. So it actually, a number of people will be aware of content-aware,
yeah,
where you just fill an area, you select an area and you have it fill, and it takes pixels from the surrounding area.
Yeah.
And you can sometimes get quite a reasonable result there to cover up a floor or something like that.
Yeah.
But it can also give you some pretty strange results too.
Yeah.
What they're saying that Deep Fill is that they're incorporating artificial intelligence into it,
yep,
so that it actually tries to understand the photograph and then fills it. So they're illustrating it with a guy who's taken almost a selfie.
Yep.
They've put a large sapphire in the middle of his nose, between his eyes, with content aware, just selecting a square box. You get like a third eye built in there.
Yep.
But with this deep fill, it produces a normal face.
Wow.
They also show an arch in one of the American national parks,
yep,
where there's two people standing under the arch. If you're content aware it, you get a bit of the rock protruding into the arch.
Yep.
Whereas with this deep fill, it
does a much better job.
So it's obviously a little while before it comes out. One of the other ones they had was another rock arch where you can actually use a sketching mechanism with deep fill and change the shape of the arch. And in this case, they've made it look like a heart.
Yeah, right.
And looking fairly realistic. So it's telling us that the AI and the computing power is going whoosh.
Yep.
And, on one hand, we're questioning Adobe with their subscription mechanism, but some of the gee-whizzery that's coming out is pretty mind-blowing.
Which I think has always been the case with Adobe.
Mm.
Yeah, you know, they, I don't know, I don't want to bash on them, but I feel like they make some questionable decisions when it comes to marketing. But they do consistently come out with some really good product, you know. So it's like their software engineers are doing amazing jobs, and their marketing team kind of leave you scratching your head sometimes. Anyway, all right, Lee filters.
Yeah, now the Lee filters one is interesting. This article is a reverse ND filter,
right?
And
that's not a new thing though.
Well, it just says it's a new reverse ND filter.
Okay. So maybe it's new for Lee. Because I know there have been reverse ND filters before.
Ah, well, that's a bit I didn't know.
Right. Oh, okay. So, yeah. So Lee have obviously just jumped into the market?
Yep.
Nice. For those who don't know what a reverse ND filter is, it's designed so that you have a filter of which 50% is a graduated filter, but instead of it being dark at one edge of the filter and fading to neutral by the 50% mark, it actually goes the other way. The graduated portion gets darker towards the middle of the filter, and so you then have this hard line between the dark part of the filter and what is essentially a clear filter. And these are designed for shooting sunrise and sunset at exactly that moment when the sun is right on the horizon. So you get the strongest amount of the ND filter right at the horizon, and it sort of fades up into the sky because the graduated part gets, you know, softer, if you like. And then the bottom half of your filter is clear, so everything in the foreground, you know, below the horizon is not filtered at all. I don't know who had them before. It might have been Hoya, but I do know that other manufacturers have had reverse ND filters before this, and obviously Lee has seen the value in jumping into that market.
Mm.
Nice. The US government is urging international airlines to ban cameras in checked luggage. I hope this falls flat on its face.
Yep.
US government, you can, you know, lean on the airlines that fly in and out of the US, I guess, but you're just going to alienate more and more people if you do get the airlines to agree to this. And to be honest, I can't see the airlines agreeing to it because they would lose so much business that it would make it hard for them to put, you know, to fill seats on planes.
But just reading this story, Bruce, yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So the first paragraph is saying the US government's urging airlines around the world to ban cameras, laptops, and other large personal electronic devices from checked luggage, citing the risk of batteries causing catastrophic fires. Okay, that sort of sounds okay.
Yeah.
And it comes from a paper that they've filed with the International Civil Aviation Organization. Okay. Right. Now, listen to the experiment. According to the report, lithium batteries, if heated and near aerosol cans, could start fires in less than a minute and potentially bring down a commercial airliner.
Right.
Heated and near aerosol cans. Well, you're not supposed to bring aerosol cans on board.
I was going to say, no. Hang on, can't you take aerosol-based like deodorants and things in your checked luggage? Or is that a no-no as well?
That might be in your checked luggage. I'm not sure.
It's a bit of a stretch, isn't it?
So it's got to be both heated and near aerosol cans.
And why would the luggage in the, yeah, like the checked luggage under the plane, why would that get heated?
Well,
I would have thought if anything, it would get colder as the plane took off and ascended to higher altitudes. Won't it get colder in there?
Well, it's not heated and it's not, you know, there's a distinct lack of oxygen there. So,
I'm just thinking that, you know, once a plane gets moving and it gets up to higher altitudes, your air temperature gets significantly colder, doesn't it?
Yeah, below zero, quite a lot.
Yeah. And the shell of the plane is metal. So, all that metal is being chilled as the plane flies through the air. And you would expect that chilling effect would translate to the air that's inside the cargo bay.
And then sometimes when you've picked up your luggage, you can find that it's cold.
Right, okay.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems like the world's getting sillier and sillier and sillier every day.
Yes, and you sort of wonder, wouldn't the easiest thing to be to make sure people just don't take aerosol cans? And I'm pretty sure the thing is don't put aerosols in your luggage.
Right.
In fact, when you look at the things you don't put in, you know, pressure aerosols are a no-no.
Right. Okay.
So it's a bit of a long bow.
The thing is, you can't stop people from wanting to take their camera gear with them on holiday, and you've got restrictions on how much stuff you can take in the cabin, and now you're saying you don't want the camera gear to be under the plane either.
Yep.
You're just going to get to a point where you're essentially denying people the opportunity to take their camera gear with them. And like I said, that's just going to end up with less people flying. And I don't know. I just can't see this working myself.
No, I think it's sort of a bit of overkill and some sensibility needs to go in there. It sounds like someone's gone a bit government mad.
Yeah.
And they've got to start, you know, thinking it through rather than sort of reacting to the one paper.
Yeah, very interesting times. Mate, thank you for stepping in Glyn's absence.
Not a problem. Thank you for having me.
I suppose I should throw in one of your book reviews on the tail end of this.
Oh, well, I could do that. I could do one straight off.
Oh, okay, if you want to do that.
Semi-interactive, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Well, I was going to pre-record it tomorrow, so.
Right. So you've already got one lined up?
I've got one lined up here. I'm just about to record it. So
if you want to do that now, go for it.
Yeah. So the book I've got this time is a little interesting. It's called The New Art of Photographing Nature.
Okay.
It's by Art Wolf with Martha Hill and Tim Gray. And Art Wolf's pretty well known and a fairly respected American photographer. He's known for his images for wildlife, landscapes, and particularly native cultures. In fact, he's published over 60 books, I found out, and wow. His photos have even been used on US postage stamps. And has a public TV series called Towards the Edge with Art Wolf, which apparently has been highly acclaimed. So I don't have cable TV, so others may be able to verify that.
Yeah.
But he's been regarded as a prolific and sensitive recorder of a rapidly vanishing natural world.
Yeah.
So this book's got over 250 of his photographs, and to be quite honest, that by itself makes this a worthwhile book to buy, let alone the other stuff that's in it, because the photographs are quite compelling throughout. It's subtitled An Updated Guide to Composing Stunning Images of Animals, Nature and Landscapes. And I guess the approach he uses is that is in the introduction at the start. There's a subheading there that sort of gives away his philosophy on it all, and it's about making order out of chaos.
Okay.
You know, basically nature is chaos and we try and make order of it ourselves. And he says that good photography is about decision making. It's not a passive process. The eye must learn to detect what is essential and turn that into some meaningful arrangement. Initially, nature appears random and chaotic. Our mind needs to make order out of that chaos to create relationships between things in order to understand them. And that basically summarizes the book. It sort of follows the usual sort of thing. There's chapters like isolating the subject, composing the picture, define your perspective, and a whole lot of things like that. And it's a pathway that a number of books we've reviewed take. But the real power of this book is the photos that are very compelling. There's some good commentary by Art and by Martha and by Tim Gray. The interesting bit is it's called The New Art of Photographing Nature because the earlier version was made in the days of film and quite a lot of these photos are from those days.
Right.
But he's brought Tim Gray on board to talk a bit more about it from a digital perspective. So, yeah, I found it a really interesting read. It's published by Amphoto, and it's a 2013 edition, and you can get it from between $31 and $66.
Nice. He does some beautiful photography. Oh, absolutely gorgeous. While you were doing that, I was just, pulled up a tab in Chrome and Googled Art Wolf and clicked on the image results, and some of his stuff is just stunning.
Yeah.
So,
he's got to be on the list, we hope.
Yeah.
Almost number one.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, mate. Well, thank you for that.
Thank you. And I hope things go well for you.
Oh, look, I'm sure they will. I'm, like I said, I'm not overly stressed by, what's unfolded this week. It's been naturally a bit of a shock, but I'm confident that I'll ride this one out pretty well and, I'll be off the sidelines pretty soon. So...
good luck.
Thank you. All right. Until we speak with you again, take care.
ShutterZincPodcast.com.
AnotherAudioTo.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@ShutterZincPodcast.com.